Well, good evening. I came today from Vienna. We are going to immerse into a big question of our existence. Why are we here? What for? And what value does it have? I want to start with a broad horizon on values and what we understand under values. And to look at on a sociological perspective, a little bit on the values on our time, just to draw the background. And then to go to the existential issues, to the connection of values and feelings and value and meaning, so that you, at the end, may have a personal access to bring more value in our lives and to come or even to help ourselves and others to find in a better way meaning. What is the role of values in our life? Value is a very abstract term. Originally, we were not speaking about values. This term has been coined in the middle of the 19th century by German philosophers because the classical term for value was used too often and therefore it was overloaded. Instead of value, philosophers were speaking about the bonum in Latin or in English or Polish. What is good? You can exchange the term value with good. And so this abstract term gets more life. It becomes more practical for us. In everyday life, we use it. We say good morning, good day, have a good recovery. And we are referring to values. We are maybe not conscious that this has to do with values. But this is the way how we deal with it in everyday life. When we have a wish, wish also contains a value. We wish you a happy new year. In this wish is contained something what is attractive, what we consider as beneficial for your life or for our life. So wishes contain value. We will see later on, meaning also and will also contains value, but already wishes have the value inside. Values give an orientation because we want to strive for what is helpful, for what is good to develop. We want to have success. We want to have a good life. When we have a value, we easily get orientation and know what to do, where to go, how to continue. We want that our child improves in school, that the child gets good marks. And we consider good marks to be a value. We may not consider enough that to have a happy child is maybe more important than to have good marks. Sometimes we overlook that. This is also an issue. To what are we oriented? What do we consider as being good? The great existential question is, what is a good life? What do I consider to be a good life? Do I have a good life? What is good life for me? What would I think? What do I expect? What is in my life lacking to be a good life? Maybe this is already a good life. I have 4 children. When I see the pictures when they were young and playing and sitting on their wooden trains and playing, and I see the pictures now, I say, oh, this was such a happy time. And then I remember, at the time, sometimes, I was so stressed. I could shoot them on the moon when they didn't eat what was cooked, when they were struggling with each other. But this is good life. To shoot children sometimes to the moon and to know I love them. Human life is that way. It's not an ideal life. It's a realistic life. And in the realistic life, also pain takes part of this life. And only, not many people, as I did also, only through a distance, it looks like this was a good life when I don't feel the pain anymore of that time. Look at the situation now. Maybe this is a good life, what I have. Stefan Zweig, the Austrian writer, once wrote a phrase, a very wise phrase. Most people are happy, but only few know about it. Maybe I'm more happy than I'm aware. This is at least a good question to go with and to have a closer look on the own life. What are the values in our time? There are big horizons. We speak about value pluralism, the value shift. We speak about freedom of opinion and maintenance of health and care for the sick. These are societal values. The education of the youth is considered in all societies as a big value. We have good schools. Nowadays, climate is a big value. You know, we fight for it and make demonstrations today in 170 cities in Europe. And we have new values we look at. The new values like freedom of abortion or free life for homosexuals and even partnership and weddings for homosexuals. Or the question of immigration, of integration of people who are leaving their countries and want to come to live in our countries. The abolition of death penalty, also a big issue. And in this context, we have norms, values, customs, rights, taboos, sanctions. All this has to do with values or customs. We are used to go to the church on Sundays. It's a custom. And it is a value. If I don't do it, I feel somehow awkward when I'm accustomed to it. And we have rights and taboos. Don't speak about the grandmother's difficult life. She doesn't want to hear it, so it is a taboo in the family. There were investigations of changes of values in our society. It started with Ronald Engelhardt in 1977. He published a first work where he spoke about the Western public has a big shift from on an overwhelming emphasis on material well-being and physical security towards a greater emphasis on quality of life. This was a great surprise. After the 50s and 60s, when especially in Central Europe, people were rebuilding their cities and were working hard, and the materialistic values were on the top, the quality of life became more dominant in the society. And then Klages, a bit later, spoke about the change from this duty and acceptance values to values around self-actualizing. During World War II and in Austria, in Germany, during that time, fulfilling duties was the top value. According to Immanuel Kant, fulfill your duty. In the 70s and 80s, it started to change. Duty is no longer considered in our societies as a big value. More value has to be yourself, to actualize yourself, to develop your capacities. Ulrich Beck finally spoke about the individualization. It became new with something which was never there around in our society, that to be myself, to develop my individuality, is a value in itself, to be independent. The liberalism, also in marketing and in business, but in private life, in families, the individualization became central. But on the other side, we also had the opposition, the dark side of the development of this change of values. The society became more egoistic. As it became a society of claims. I want this, I need this, the state has to provide me with that, and my partner has to provide me with that, the school has to provide personality development to the scholars, not only to give information or teaching issues. Pleasure became very central, a society of pleasure. And this egoism was called a society of elbows. On the highway, people were driving only on the left side. Even when they were slow, they didn't go right anymore. I am the one. When I was educated in my time, we were educated to be modest and obeying and to be selfless. This was the goals in my time in the 50s. But nowadays, people say we must educate our children to be capable to stand for themselves and to fight for themselves and their rights. And this is this more elbow mentality, which is stronger now in educational programs. This makes people a bit more ruthless, inconsiderate. Solidarity is suffering, and corruption has a good basis to develop. Some sociologists lament on this decline of values, and they see in it a loss of the moral basis in the society, like a diminution of the bond of humans to religion, to church, to loss of virtues, and they claim for a turn to more authority and traditional values. And I think right now we are more in this fight than we have been 5 years ago. The traditionalists, the right power can become stronger, and right is always more for law and order, for the traditional values. We had maybe too much freedom, too much openness of our borders and European community and worldwide connection of economy and influences. So there is a stronger tendency now to go back and to look at the own countries and not the connection with the other countries, not the community so much. To summarize, it seems assured that in the 60s, 70s, happened a great shift of these societal values. Obedience or subordination became old-fashioned, out of interest. People were really looking to more autonomy and free will. And the background to this is education and quality of work and quality of life. People did not have to struggle so much for surviving as it was the case at the beginning of the last century or during that period of wars. Autonomy and free will. This means that there is a big responsibility. How do I know what I want? How can I live autonomous? Who or what gives me the orientation? It is much easier to follow what the priest preaches in the church or what the director says or what authorities or politicians say. When I'm autonomous, it's me who has to decide about that. And I have to take over the responsibility. So this needs a growth of personality to be able to deal with these new values, which are still high ranked in our society, but where we are now thinking about, don't we have too much of this? Shouldn't we have more limitations and boundaries and orders? When we look at the program of the Green Party in Germany, they have really much more regulations in their program. Maybe we need more regulations. History is always a pendulum, you know. You go from one extreme or one pole to the other pole. Why happened these causes, just to make it briefly, these changes, what are the causes? Engelhardt brought up the idea of the socialization. I don't want to make it too short, too long. It is just a short glimpse that the way how we live together, how we educate and get trained, this socialization brought up the change. Clarke saw the being fed up with materialistic values, and he spoke about the post-materialistic time. And there was, of course, a great prosperity and mobility and much more communication. And counseling and therapy has to deal with these changes. So we have to look at more at the individual, at the own freedom, the own responsibility, and how we can help people to find their orientation. And this brings up the question of value and of meaning. What can I do that my life becomes valuable and meaningful? Do I have new values? And how do we find values? And this builds the bridge to the existential part in it. Existentially relevant values, we have two forms. The categories, and the abstract categories, justice, for instance, friendship, values, which are, of course, of importance. But they are only of importance when I have a personal connection to them. When I look at to what am I connected. Friendship is nice as a category. And of course, we have to fight for friendships, but it happens only in real friendships. Health is nice, but it matters only when I lose my health, then I am touched. And I start to do more sports, more movement, more physical exercise, look after the cholesterol and the sweets. Only what touches me personally really matters on an existential level. And so we can define value on a general way. This is still a bit abstract. We become more and more closer to the own experience. When we try to define what is a value, it is not so easy to come to a definition where all people can agree. Practically speaking, when I do something instead of something else, the reason why I prefer this is because I see there a value or a greater value. You came here tonight, you would have other possibilities to spend a nice Friday evening, but you came here and chose this. Why? The reason why you did this, we can call a value. So value is something which makes me prefer something and put back something else. When I have coffee instead of tea, then coffee for the moment has a higher value for me because it tastes better for the moment than tea. Even in little things, it's the same structure in little choices or in big choices. When I get married with this person has the highest value of all women in the world whom I know, or all men in the world. I prefer this person to other persons, which does not mean that other persons are worthless. But for me, for my personal life in this situation, they have more value, or this person has more value. So the reason of a preference, what is this reason? We say reason, maybe it's not even a real reason. Is it a thinking? Are these facts? Is it just because others do the same? Do I orient myself on what is usually be done? Or are there authorities who tell me what to do? The existential value has a specific connection. It is connected with feelings, with personal feelings. A value is something what is able to move me inwardly, to touch me. When I see the sunset, I'm astonished. I look at it. The sunset, something happens to me, then it has a value. When I'm occupied with something else, because I have to drive on the highway, and I don't have time to look at the sunset and to immerse in the sunset and its beauty, the higher value is to survive in the situation when I'm driving on the highway. So the value of the sunset, I don't observe it. I'm not touched by it. I'm touched by what's going on the highway. And I feel it needs my attention. And I prefer to look at the highway. So whatever I do, it becomes a value only when it makes movement within me, when it attracts me. When I'm touched, I feel closeness. In closeness, I am touched. In a distance, in the abstract terms, like freedom or responsibility or friendship, as we said before, these abstract terms do not touch. Therefore, they are not existentially relevant. They are not relevant on my actual decision. Smoking is harming my body. But as long as I only know it, it's not motivating me to stop it. We have this experience. Something must be done which touches me. Otherwise, it's not moving me in that way that I change my activity. When I have a problem with my partner, or my partner tells me, let's speak about how you deal with me all the time, and I'm not happy with this. When it doesn't touch me, it doesn't move me. Then I say, well, you have a problem, so go to a psychotherapist. Yeah? But when I see the sad eyes, or when I see him or her crying, when I see that, or when the partner is shouting and aggressive, and that's the value of an aggression in such a case, then the aggression is transcending the border and coming to me, and I say, oh, something is going on, it's dangerous. And then I'm touched, and when I'm touched, I'm ready to speak about it. The way how we are touched may be different, but the effect must be there to be able to speak about the value. The effect that something comes close to me, and only what comes close to me has the power to touch me. It may be a physical touch. When I get a caress, I feel something. This is much more than I'm just touched like when I walk on the street and somebody hits me. A caress, there's a content in this gesture, in this movement. And this I feel. And this closeness touches me. So it is important that we experience closeness from time to time. We need caresses. It's not enough to live in an abstract knowledge that my partner loves me. If we don't touch, the value will not be present so much. It is more present when I feel. Through feelings, we detect values. So we can say, whatever touches me is a value. When it touches me in a way that it feels good, that it is somehow nurturing my life, when it produces a joy, then it is a positive value. When it touches me in a way that hurts, then we have a negative value. So in other words, what I described before means we can experience value only in relationships. We must get into touch to enter a relationship to be able to perceive a value. Relationship. What is a relationship? Relationship means I feel something for you and I want to feel you. My relationship to my child means this child means a lot to me. Whatever happens to my child moves me. And when I'm studying with my child and do vocabulary learning with my child or testing, I'm not only fixed on the knowledge and the amount of vocabulary of words which my child already knows and or does not know. I'm present in a feeling way. I'm resonating. I'm empathizing. When I'm in a relationship, I want to feel you. I turn towards you and open up emotionally. Entering a relationship means this openness, ready to be touched. A relationship without feelings is a contact, but not a relationship. Relationship means I'm not afraid of closeness. I'm ready to perceive you emotionally and to let act you upon me. But about what in me? What is it? What touches me? What is touched when I'm touched by an object or a situation or a relationship? What is it? What is touched when I listen to music and I like it and I hear your beautiful Chopin? I think nobody cannot be touched when we hear Chopin. It is impossible. It goes through the ears to where? Where is the place where it goes? What is happening to me when I listen to that? Or when I see a picture, or when I see the face of my child or of my partner and look into the eyes of somebody. What is touched in me? My thinking, my memory, my biography, my expectations. All these are only surroundings. In the center is something else. In the center is my life. I live. I am here as a living being with a living body. But not only my body, my biological life is there. There's only my psychological life. A life in me where I feel what is going on. Life happens to me, or life becomes actualized when I get into resonance, when I'm triggered by something, when I come close, when I listen to music, or when I see your eyes, and when it enters into me and starts vibrating in me. And this vibration is the beat of the heart. This vibration is this being psychologically alive. And when my psychological life is fostered, is nurtured by that what I experience. So whatever is good, we perceive it by that screen within me, which is formed by my life. Values are these objects which bring into vibration my life. In my feelings happens my life. Life is only there where I feel. Without feelings, we don't experience life. Only in feelings, which are moved by a relationship, by closeness. Only in feelings and in relationships, life takes place. Therefore, it is so important that we have good relationships. And when a relationship to a partner with whom we live together is not nurturing, not feeding me, it's somehow not worth. We have to work on it, to change it, or sometimes to separate. Not everybody is apt to be so nurturing to me, is so fitting to me that this person is able to improve my life and to bring my life into resonance. Existentially relevant values are perceived by our feelings. Feelings are much more than just a shadow of the rational or of the thoughts. Feelings are important because they bring in the connection to how it is for my life. And it is important that we nurture our life throughout our existence, because without nurturing life, we become void, empty, depressive. Depressive people experience their life as not being good. The way how I live does not resonate with me. It does not give me so much that I prefer to continue life. So the depressive people, they don't connect very much with life anymore, because life is not experienced, not felt, not perceived as being a value, or so valuable that it is worthy to continue. Feelings, being touched by something, they produce an inner movement, this connection with life. In feelings swings life. When we go to the restaurant, we go there to have good feelings while we are eating. When we go to the cinema, we go there for experiencing feelings, not so much to just get information. When we meet friends, we go there to feel well when we are together, to get into resonance, to meet the other person again, and to be stimulated, to receive this richness, this value of being together with you, to spend good time and in a good resonance. So in these feelings, our life swings. We are much more occupied with feelings than we normally know in our Central European culture. This is certainly different in Africa. Feelings, therefore, have the capacity to discover what is relevant for our life. And feelings need care. Feelings shouldn't be put aside, because feelings are perceptions. Feelings are not the shadow which follows our actions or the facts. Feelings are like a sixth sense which perceives how relevant this situation, this object, this experience is for my life. If it is nurturing my life or detrimental for my life, inhibiting life. Where, how does it go to feel? How do we, can we come to feel? We have to look a bit on this, so that you, this gives us better access to values. First, it needs relationship. And then it needs a letting go, a letting be. We listen to music, and then we do nothing. We let the music act upon me. It's like a massage of my soul, what the music makes. Or when we look to the sunset, or when we look at the problem which I have with my partner, how is this going to massage my soul? How does it influence me? What does it do with me? How is my life coming into resonance, or how not? And this is what we look at. How do we feel in the presence of this when we let up, acted the music upon me? And then we feel. And when we listen to Bach, we get other feelings than when we listen to Schubert or to Chopin or to Smetana. And this impression, this inner movement, this we call feeling. Feeling is an inner movement which is produced by a close contact with something, somebody, or a situation. There is no feeling without a stimulus, without an object, without a trigger. It may be a thought. It may be an association. It may be a memory which comes up. And I may have angry feelings, because it reminds me to a bad situation which I had to go through. It is always connected with an object, because feelings are perceptions. And when we have a feeling, we already have perceived something. And now we go, let's go even a bit deeper and to understand better the feelings. There is the deepest value which we have is life itself. The fundamental value is this feeling which I have when I ask myself, how is it for me, the fact that I live? Is it good that I live? Am I grateful that I can be alive? Or don't I matter? Is it a feeling like happy when it's over? Some people have that. Or I don't care. Whatever may happen, then I have no good connection with this fundamental value. And what is now the experience of values ultimately producing? It ultimately produces, here you see the value. This is me. I live. And whatever improves my yes to life, we call this a value. The fundamental value is this feeling that my life is good. I like to live. Nobody can say that for me. Not my parents, not my teachers, nobody. This is absolutely personal and subjective. There is no objective notion about it. We have to live our life subjectively, not objectively. I must live it. And I, with my life, in which connection am I? Can I say yes? Can I agree with this life? Can I say, yes, it's good, I'm thankful, grateful that I can live? The depressive says, no. The more depressive people are, the more and the clearer they say, no, it's not good. Therefore, severe depressive people are naturally in the risk of committing suicide. They don't care for life. They look for to become free from life. It's not good how they experience. But the not depressive somehow says, yeah, possibly it's good, I don't know. Then I'm not yet really decided for my life. But how can I become more decided for my life? I have to look for values because say each value improves my yes to life. This may be little values. When I go for a walk and after half an hour, I feel refreshed. I feel the fresh air, the movement, the good to my body. Then it's easier to say yes under these circumstances. It's easier to say yes to my. It may be big issues, my partnership, my job, my belief. If it is nurturing my relationship to life, then it is a value. And we need values. We need good experiences every day. Otherwise, we will lose our connection to life. And the more bad experiences we have, the more experiences we have which improve the no to life, the less valuable is our life. So whatever we feel when we ask ourselves, do I like to live? It is a result of all these summary, of this summary of experiences throughout life. And our feelings, don't forget. We may not remember what we experience, but in the feelings, we have all this contained. All these experiences, the positive and the negative experiences. It is sometimes hard work in psychotherapy to work it out and to unwrap what made it that you have no zest for life, that you don't like it. Why? Something happened. It does not come from the genes. To summarize, a value is what is good. Good is fostering life, improves my attitude to life. With that, I like more to live. When it is such, when I'm loved, when it is such, it's easier to live. It is attracts me to life. Values are attractive. They don't push me. They draw me. Meaning is connected with values. We will see now how. Because the meaning question is the question, I'm there, but for what? Is there something good in my being here? Is there something good in your being here in this talk tonight? If there is nothing good or not good enough, it will not be meaningful. But when there is something good, then it is somehow constructive. It improves my connection to life. It makes me feel, makes me connect better with life and makes me say, more easily, yes, when it is such, then it is okay. So the meaning question is, what for? To what end? What is at the end? To come to an answer to this, or to orient myself better in the meaning question, Viktor Frankl proposed or brought into psychology the so-called existential turn. The question of meaning. What for? What meaning does it have? Need to find an answer to this question. It is helpful and important to give the whole thing an existent, a turn of 180 degrees. And instead of continuing to ask, what do I get for when I do this? Is this helpful for my career? How much money do I get? Will I get attention or esteem if I do this? Instead of me asking, what do I get? To make a turn of 180 degrees and let the situation ask me. Instead of being the one who asks the question, I am now the one who is questioned, who is in question, who is asked from the situation. What does this situation want from me? Then I'm in the position to give an answer. Then I'm in the position of superior. The one who gives the answer is in the superior position than to the one who asks the question. The one who asks the question is dependent. The one who gives the answer is free. When we make this existential turn, we make us free in our life. We let the situation ask and we give the answer by doing, not just by talking. What is this situation asking me? You hear that, what we speak about? And the question is simply, what are you going to do with that? Do you take that? And do you feel that it has some value? It is good. It is important. It could help me in my actual life. Could I take it that way and say, well, in that case, maybe I will speak about that with my friend, with my partner, or I will consider this when I am with my child or in the working place, or I will even ponder about it a bit more and make it a discussion or a talk with good friends, because it is relevant. Can I make use of it for my question? Can I apply it? This situation, you hear that, and what you hear is asking you, and now, what am I going to do with that? How am I going to apply it? Do I think about clear, concrete situations where I could improve it? Work more on values, to enter more into contact, into relationship, to speak about it, exchange it. Talking about personal issues is very helpful for oneself and most often for others. If we don't just lament on the things, but if we are searching and open and speak about our experiences, this makes relationships, family life much more personal than just talk about what is going on and what we have to do. So existential turn means, what is this situation asking me? This is good for normal life, but it is especially very critical in difficult life situations. When we have to deal with a cancer, the question now is, shouldn't be like, wow, what life will this be for me? What do I get from life now after the divorce? What will be my life now? What do I get? Will I have pleasure or so? With cancer, I can't do my tennis anymore, and now, is it worth living? This is the old type of question. After the existential turn, we look at it differently. What does this cancer want from me? This cancer, this life, this situation, what does my life want from me under such a situation? My life wants from me that I'll try to have a good life with cancer. And this is possible. We can be even happy having cancer. This is what the situation wants from me. How do I continue after divorce? This is what life wants from me. To remain connected with what is valuable. And if life in general has a value and I feel it as valuable, because I like to live, even now I have this hard time. This hardship makes it tremble and difficult and rejects me a bit from life. But nevertheless, there are ways, there are possibilities. It's not the end. It can be the beginning of a new life, of something what I didn't live before. I met people, I had many patients who were severely sick with cancer and then were in the hospital in the last stage of their life. And I had people who said, this was such a good time. I looked at things which I never did before and I wouldn't have done if I wouldn't have had cancer. The existential turn brings me into the scene of life. It depends on me if this situation becomes meaningful or not. On my way, how I deal with it. On my way to give answer. On my personal answer. On my personal activities. This gives life to my life. This gives value to my life. This makes even suffering meaningful. Suffering in itself has no meaning. But the way how I deal with it, there we can come to meaning. So meaning is a difficult term. We can put it into a short picture which shows you the essential of meaning. And it says, meaning is the direction of my life. It's the sense, the purpose and meaning. It is in Spanish, sentido, in French, le sens, in Italian, senso. And, you know, in these countries, we don't have to explain what the term meaning means. Because in Rome, you have so many streets where it's written the unique meaning, senso unico, one way. It is the same word in the Roman languages. Not in English, but in the Roman languages. They know. Meaning is the direction which I have. And I have the feeling that my life is meaningful because this way which I am going leads to somewhere where is a value. This is, let's say, the street which leads me home. To get home in the evening is a value. When I am following this street, it is meaningful to continue. But when I am lost in a city looking for the hotel, and I continue to drive, and I'm not sure if I'm really on the right way to find my hotel, and just to say, well, I drive, and driving is always meaningful, and then I find me outside of the city after a while. This is not meaningful. It's not doesn't make sense to continue an activity just because it is activity. If I don't see the goal, if I don't see where it leads, meaning is the signpost which leads to a value, which leads to something which is nurturing my life, which is connecting me more with life, which helps me to say yes to my life. So you see how meaning and value are connected. Meanings are always connected with values. It is the practicability to come to values, to realize a value. And when we feel something is meaningless, when we feel our life or our relationship or our work is meaningless, then we see no value. Or the road is blocked, so we can't come there. Or we do not have enough power to walk on that street. Then we get the feeling it is meaningless. This is a perception, a felt perception. We feel if something is meaningful or meaningless. Because feelings are the capability to detect what is relevant for my life, for saying yes to my life. Whenever meaninglessness shows up, it tells me, don't continue this road. Stop. Look around. There may be a better road. But this road leads to nothing. It's not valuable. What for should I continue if I don't see that it leads to something valuable? It is a very complex term, but ultimately it is as simple as such. Don't go on. Don't continue this way when you feel it is meaningless. And these feelings of meaninglessness are really detective. They show us on which way we are, in which direction we are. We have two forms of meaning to differentiate. What we are speaking now was the existential meaning. The existential meaning can be defined the most valuable possibility. So it means it is always a possibility. Possibility means not force, not exertion. It is possible. I can do it or not. I have when I come to a crossing, I have the possibility to go right or left. It gives me freedom. Possibilities are always combined with the experience of freedom. I have the possibility. I don't have to. There is no must. The meaning is always experienced as a possibility. If I feel it as a must, forget about meaning. We will not experience it as meaningful. When somebody forces me, we will not experience it as free as meaningful. As long as I feel be forced, I must feel free. Otherwise, it will not be experienced as a meaning. A possibility, but a valuable, a possibility which is connected with a value, which this value, it is possible to come here tonight. You expect from the title of the presentation, there can be something interesting for me. That's the value. Now you see, now you know if this was true or not, because there is always a risk, of course, in life. I get the advertisement, and And it promises me something, but if it happens or not, I don't know. It could be very disappointing. He's just speaking about sociological values, public values, societal values. It has some interest, but it's not so relevant for my, you know. So, but if it meets that, what I can use, what I can apply, then it may be meaningful because it was a valuable possibility, maybe the most valuable possibility for tonight. There are many other valuable possibilities, but the most valuable. This is the meaningful situation. In this given situation is tonight. Wherever I am in a situation, I am embedded in context. The existential meaning follows the existential term. The ontological meaning is the meaning of life. What meaning has my life? What for am I born? Why is there, are there wars? What meaning does the universe have? All these questions are philosophical questions and questions of religion. All religion give answers to this question, but psychology can't. Psychology can speak about existential meaning, but the overall meaning, the meaning of being, ontological means being, the meaning of being itself, the meaning why I am, this we can't know. We can have an inkling, a feeling. We can express something in art or see, get some answers in art. No human being knows it. This was this remarkable twist which Frankl made in psychology and brought in the existential term. When these questions come up, either we find answers in religion or in philosophy or in art, or both, we should apply the existential term and to make it practicable, feasible for us, to bring it into the dimension of the human being. The meaning of being, the meaning of life, is a divine dimension. This supersedes our capacity to know. This is transcendental. We can't grasp the answer of such an all-encompassing question. But we can make it a turn and we can say, well, the meaning of being, I don't know. But the meaning of being here tonight and to look at what is life asking me by being here? How can I contribute? How can I become fruitful for myself or for others? This is the meaning of the situation. And somehow the meaning of the situation is connected with the meaning of being. And we can hope that if I connect many, many situations, meaningful hours, every day, many days, meaningful days, that we come closer, tangential, closer to the meaning of being itself, to the meaning, to the ontological meaning. But grasping, graspable becomes the meaning of being only in this situation here. And the meaning of being tonight in this situation, I hope you found an answer and thank you for your attention.
Good evening, Professor. Thank you very much for this moving lecture. I got three questions. The first one is, of course, we should listen to our feelings, but sometimes our feelings also deceive me. You know, for example, I'm overweight by about 10 kilos and I still want to eat. This is my feeling. My reason says something different. What is the direction? What cues can you give us when to listen to the reason and when to listen to the feelings? This is the first thing.
Maybe I answered one question after the other. Otherwise, I will forget.
All right.
Okay, because this is a big question and a very good question. I have the feeling of hunger and I want to eat. Confront yourself with your feeling. And while eating, ask yourself, how does it feel that I'm eating? with each bit you take into the mouth. Enjoy it and openly ask yourself, how does it feel to eat that? Do I have an inner consent to it? Do I agree? Is it? Do I feel that this is something good to me? And take a month or two time for this exercise, and you will see it will change. Maybe not the first day, and maybe not in the first week yet. But we sometimes have to learn to open up ourselves, to be ready to be connected more deeply. And when I'm connected more deeply with myself, with what I'm doing, and let it enter into me with opening up by asking myself, does it feel like being good for me? Do I have the feeling I do something good to me? Rational is one thing. This is not so much connected with life. But to have a closer look to the feeling, this will really open up a new access. For instance, I stopped smoking by doing that because I felt at the beginning, I said, yeah, wonderful. I enjoyed it. And for weeks and some months, but after a certain time, I felt I was ready to feel deeper and to step out of my bubble of cognitions and expectations and pictures which we have in mind. We live in worlds, in interpreted worlds, and to open up and to become more ready to let me touch and to feel, does it really taste like this as I thought? And I remarked a difference between my expectations and thought and what I really felt. But I had to become, I was so adjusted to smoking, I had to become ready to feel again. So this was my first answer. Thank you.
All right. So maybe only one more question because other people also want to. You are a disciple of Viktor Frankl. Mm-hmm. Viktor Frankl is one of my biggest masters. I wrote an MA thesis about him. So maybe you could tell us how, if you were to describe Professor Frankl, what was he like as a person?
He was a very vivid, attentive, bright person who always liked to make a joke in all situations. Because making a joke meant to him, he was Jewish, you know, Jewish people have lots of jokes and humors and so. And it meant to him, it was not just making a joke, it meant to him to summarize the essential of the situation in a way where he can step out a bit and look at it. And we had close collaboration because I fit quite well to his behavior. He knew so many jokes, and I didn't. And I didn't remember the joke. So he could tell me the same joke 5 times, 10 times, and I could laugh, really openly laugh about them because I already have forgotten the last time he told me the joke. So this was one of our bits we had. So there's, of course, a lot of things to speak about. He was very deep and serious person. I think he was very religious, although he never said it. He always said, I don't know if I'm religious because I don't know if that what I believe in really corresponds to what I think it could be. Or if my image or my way to be in contact with God, if this is really God with whom I am in contact or not. He was very self-critical also, and of course, philosophically critical in that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. It was very, very interesting. And you speak a lot about feelings, so it's very interesting. What do you think? Was it a feeling who gave birth to the thought, or the thought was first who gave birth to the feeling? So what is the causal consequence relationship? Thank you.
The interconnection between thoughts and feelings.
Yes.
They are bidirectional. A thought always produces a feeling. When the thought becomes too abstract, it produces the feeling of being boring. I don't grasp it. When the thought is connected with my life, let's say with a life experience, then it is fascinating. Feelings can produce thought. From where do my thoughts come? What makes me think? What gives me the idea? What makes me creative? This is ultimately a secret. Thoughts come up out of the depths of myself, my soul, my psyche, and feelings may contribute a lot and give the thoughts the living basis, the power, the ingredient. When I am in love, which is a strong feeling, we become so creative and we may produce poems. It flows out of me. And when I'm sad, I get totally different thought. I see the world through another glass. So both directions are going. This is a unity. Thoughts create feelings and feelings create thoughts. Okay. Thank you.